Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome to an hour of Mind Power. We have got a terrific guest today, a man that I think is a, well, just an extraordinary writer, and celebrating the ordinary. How does that sound to you? Does that sound like something you'd want to consider? Well, I think you're going to enjoy my guest today, Kent Nerburn. He holds a PhD in religion and art, and he's been a man that's had a very interesting life. Kent, welcome to the show.
Happy to be here.
You have a fascinating background. You have worked as a sculptor of religious imagery. You've been at the Westminster Benedictine Abbey in Mission, British Columbia. You've been at the Peace Museum in
Hiroshima. The sculptures have been there. I've been there in terms of being a sculptor. My sculptures have been there.
Uh-huh. And then you've also worked with the Ojibwe Indians of northern Minnesota.
Right.
And you've been working at collecting information from the tribal elders. That must really be fascinating.
Well, actually, I've worked with a number of tribes. That happened a few years ago in the late 90s. Or actually, it was the late 80s. I decided to take some time and go work in a very isolated reservation in northern Minnesota, helping students collect the memories of the elders. And I did that for about 2 years, and it absolutely changed my life. The whole experience of living and working among the Native people was it was an eye-opener on many, many levels. And so at that point, I sort of committed myself to continuing to work with Native subjects, and I did a long actually a four-year project on Chief Joseph and the Flight of the Nez Perce, and have written two books that have both won the Minnesota Book Award about travels with an elder out in the Dakotas. And the whole idea behind all of this, and this is how it plays into Ordinary Sacred, is seeking what I think is an authentic American spirituality that grows out of the land, not one that's imported onto our shores, but one that listens to the voices of the land and listens to the voices of the people who were here before, those of us who are not Native, and at the same time does a fair homage to the traditions that we brought with us to these shores, the Judeo-Christian traditions.
There is often, I think, a misunderstanding relative to Native Americans, in that they were just people. They were people just like us, but they had to live off of the land. And so they needed to acquire understandings, and not every one of them had them, but the elders did. And I had the privilege of having as a student in my classes a number of years ago a gentleman who at the time was in his 30s, and he belonged to a tribe in Canada. And he had been selected by the elders of the tribe to become the up-and-coming shaman. Mm-hmm. And they had put him through all kinds of trials and exercises, and he really didn't want to do it until he reached, he just really wasn't interested, and then he went through a number of experiences of his own. But he said something that most people don't realize is that there is a lot of training that goes into the development of the position of responsibility within the tribe. And he said, I could not believe everything that I was expected to know, to learn, and to pass on. And this is something that when I found out that you had been involved with recording stories from the elders, I think that this is so important because they have had experiences that most of the younger generation will never know. What was the most significant impact for you in sharing time, space, and energy with the elders?
Oh, There are a number that I could point to, a number of changes that took place in my life. One is their acceptance of reality as it's given to us, that they're not always seeking the past and the future. And this is one of the, it ties in many ways into an almost Buddhist notion of reality, an acknowledgement and honoring of the present. And they have such a close tie to the seasons and the cycle of life, the belief that the children and the elders hold hands in the cycle of life, and that when we pass, we just simply pass, that, like the phrase they often use, rather than dying, as they say, someone walked on.
Mm-hmm.
And they, I think the biggest impact for me was to get over that kind of lurking fear of death, not to say that that the mystery of it doesn't challenge me, but that their sort of equanimity in relation to their own passing was a very great truth for me. And, you know, we can say that, but we look at ourselves as a species apart. In fact, we often don't even look at ourselves as a part of nature. When people talk about nature, they're talking about something outside of themselves. Very often. But the native people see themselves so much as part of nature that they think in the metaphors of nature, they think in the seasons, they think in the cycles, their medicine wheels, the colors move through the seasons. Everything is in the seasons of a human life, the seasons of the world, the seasons of the planets. And so this feeling of integration was something that I became very enamored of. It was a very calming effect. And then there were other little lessons that we sort of separate the sacred from the everyday. And again, these are subtle distinctions that we don't necessarily make, but we come from traditions where the holy is something other than the ordinary. And for them, the sacred inheres in everything. They teach the children. And the young children now don't always learn it, but they teach them to listen first, to hear nature, to be present to the world outside of them. And automatically, they're willing to speak of the sacred in every situation. And even if they're just pretty funky characters, and you know, sometimes you would never see anything spiritual about them, they're comfortable about speaking spiritual language. They're comfortable about having, well, everyone, apparently Donna disappeared. We don't know quite where, but I thought what I would do, given the opportunity, is read you a little prologue from the book that we're discussing, Ordinary Sacred. I think you may find it interesting because it explains what the book is about. It's called Saskatchewan Wind, and the lead in it is a divine voice singing through all of creation from a traditional Jewish prayer. Years ago, I was traveling across the great Saskatchewan prairies, a young man alone with a love of the road and a dream in his heart. Evening was approaching and long shadows were darkening the draws and stretching like fingers across the rolling golden land. A rancher passing in a truck saw me walking and stopped to pick me up. Like many who live in the great spaces, he was a man of few words. We rode in peaceful silence until he noticed a break in the wire fence that ran along the side of the road. "Got to check my stock," he said. "Want to come along?" We walked to the top of a rise and looked out over the blowing amber grasslands. The sky above was fading to evening's lavender, and the wind hissed and sighed as it moved among the hills and draws and endless sea of tall grass prairies. The rancher turned to me and said a few words, but I could not make them out through the keening of the wind. I smiled and shrugged, and he went back to searching the distant hills for signs of his stock. When we got back to the truck, I apologized for not understanding what he had said. "Oh, it wasn't important," he said, "just making conversation." "It was the wind," I explained. "It was so loud I couldn't hear you." He gave a short, knowing chuckle. "Oh, yeah, the wind," he said. "I don't even hear it anymore. The only time I notice it is when it stops." We rode on in silence until we came to a rutted gravel turnoff. "This is my road," he said, and pulled over to let me out. I thanked him for the ride, we shook hands, and I stepped out into the tiny ribbon of highway that moves solitary off toward the west. How much it seems the voice of God in our lives is like that wind. So constant, so present, that we only notice it when it stops. In times of crisis, the loss of a loved one, a marriage gone bad, a fight with a friend that leaves us feeling misunderstood and unloved. Then we feel the great emptiness around us and reach out for the calming presence that we are not alone in the world. But God's voice has not stopped. Like that great Saskatchewan wind, it has only paused to catch its breath and to remind us by its silence to listen more closely and take it less for granted when it begins to whisper once again.
Okay.
This is a book for those who seek to hear that whisper, who believe that God speaks as surely in the murmurs of the trees and the laughter of the children from the pulpits of the churches and the synagogues, who know that a mother tucking a child into bed is offering a prayer of joyful praise as surely as the cantor or the minister or the monk at evening vespers. The great Hindu leader Mahatma Gandhi said, "It is better in prayer to have a heart without words than words without heart." Jesus in the Gospel of John said, "The wind blows where it will, and you hear its sound, but know not from whence it comes or to where it is going." This book is a reminder to keep our hearts open to the winds of God's whispers. It is not important that we know from whence they come or to where they are going, or even if we give them a name. All we need to know is that the moments of love, of caring, of the unprotected human heart, whenever we encounter them, are the voice of the Spirit blowing like the wind through our everyday lives. Our task in life is to hear that voice and to make of each day a prayer that bears witness to its presence.
Yes,
and that's what I wanted to do in this book. Are you there, Donna?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
You're far down a hole somewhere. But
okay, yes, we live someplace, don't have any idea. I think it's those little gremlins that wear special little technology suits and say, okay.
Yep. But I don't know whether you heard. I just read the first section of the book that I think explains some of what I want people to get from this and what the book intends to do.
Yes, I did. Your stories, as I said, are just absolutely charming. And one of them, and I'm relating to this even in the immediate, I was over at a veterans hospital just shortly before the show. And I was sitting there, and there was a little girl. She was under the age of 2. And I gave her my children's book that I had published, which is beautifully illustrated. And I looked at this child, and I know her dad had been injured seriously. And when I knew I was going to be interviewing you today, you have this charming story, this chapter that says, "Just a Kid."
Mm-hmm.
And it's about a little girl and how people make a difference in the life of a child, and how excited she was when you wrote in one of her books. She was so pleased that she knew an author, and you had such an impact in her life because you were so open to her and you were so gracious when you were working with her. And you bring out a point in your story. It says, "You were privileged to have this relationship because this little girl chose you as someone to value. And you know that how you treat her, what you say, how you conduct yourself adds a value to her life." And I think that that's so true. I think many times if we can recognize that those little moments of interaction that establish trust with a child, that establish a love of beauty, that establish a love of learning, that establish a world of imagination. All of these things are so vitally important, and that's what makes your book so special, because you go into various environments that you found yourself in, and you have extrapolated these insights that you have become aware of, and that's why your book titled Ordinary Sacred is such a marvelous item to be able to pick up and to read, because you are saying, be mindfully present. Now, this is one of the things that the Native Americans very much are supportive of. They want you to be aware of where you are right in the moment.
Right, yeah. And mindfully present, that's a wonderful choice of words, because that's exactly what the book is about. We all live... We don't all live holy lives. We live in a world alive with holy moments. And what we're responsible for is to see the artistry of creation at all times. And it's hard. We don't live on an elevated level, at least most of us don't. We get angry at things. We get upset. We get caught in the moment. We're dealing with the administrative realities of daily affairs. And so much of what I read and see in terms of inspirational and self-help books sort of sets the bar very, very high. You know, seven things to do to make your life better. And they're like sort of spiritual equivalent of diet books. You know, that, yeah, if you did it all, it would be great. But we don't all do it that way. So what I wanted to do in this book was instead call people's attention to the ordinary moments. Going and finding my father's old toolbox when I had to fix a light switch, seeing a little girl in a school, finding a young boy who was mentally handicapped who was bothering me when I was sitting and trying to read on a bench, traveling with my family out in New Mexico, ordinary moments where I tried to find what was extraordinary in them. And so the whole purpose of doing the book was to make a small book that would almost be it could be like a guidebook that a person can carry with them. And it doesn't raise up their, it doesn't give them any series of lessons or anything about how to live better. What it does is what gives you short stories that remind you, aha, yes, I have to look more deeply into this moment to see what the, see where the heartbeat of this moment is rather than merely the administrative realities. Mm-hmm. So it really, mm-hmm. that is... There is no doubt that there is a Native American cast to my thinking because it's definitely infused itself in my thinking and informed my way of looking. But ultimately, the stories are about, they range far and wide, and they are just about the ordinary sacred.
When you were talking about your dad's toolbox, you have a story in here about that, and I really loved what you mentioned. And that the toolbox in and of itself is nothing. If somebody else saw it, they just go, oh, it's a toolbox. Boom, that's it. But there was something special with it. And I think just about everyone has something in their possession that has belonged to a person that was very, very meaningful to them. And so often the item is very nondescript, mm-hmm. and yet it is treasured. I think of a very good friend of mine after she had walked on, using the Native description. She had a member of the, there was a member of her family that contacted me, and they had known how close we had been as friends for many, many years, and they said, is there anything that of her items that you would like to have? And the one thing, and it surprised the woman, I think, but she said, whatever it is you want, you choose. Well, my friend had a baseball that was signed by very famous people. There were some other things that were significant, maybe in the minds of others. But what I wanted was a photograph mm-hmm. of my good friend and myself. That's the only thing I wanted. Now, that was important to me because I knew whenever I looked at that photograph, I would have that wonderful memory of someone that I had shared a lot of breakfast time with, a lot of lunch time with, just she was a very special person in my life. The other stuff didn't make any difference. And I think all of us have those particular things that we recognize as something very valuable. And many times they're passed along in families. And it's not so much that they may be worth a large amount of money, like you see things described on the Antique Roadshow. That's not it. It's what's the story behind it. What is it that brings the magic of memory and the magic of value and tales that are just incredible to pass along to others? And I think that's what the story of the toolbox is. And one of the last lines in that story, not one, but the last line, is, will my son remember that I loved? And I thought that's very, very significant, mm-hmm. because objects disappear. They can be, you know, sold. They can be burned. Mm-hmm. Things go.
You know, there's almost
the essence of the story that stays.
And there's almost a bigger truth when I look back at the book. You know, sometimes when you're writing, you don't know what it is you're creating. And we all have a unity to our being that we don't always see except in retrospect. And I mean, we all know that when it comes to looking back on your life, you say, you didn't know why things happened the way they happened. But when you look back on them, you say, oh, I would not be who I am today if these things hadn't happened. Mm-hmm. So we understand only looking backward. And in the same way, we oftentimes only understand the significant moments and the significant objects looking backward. My father, as I said in that story, my father's big thing was to try to pass on this picture, autographed picture of Babe Ruth that he had. And he thought he was giving us something of great value. It turns out it's not worth as much as one would wish in terms of just the economic value. But ultimately, it wasn't worth anything to me on any level because it never meant much to my dad. It never meant much to me. It was something of economic value. It was like a savings bond or something. But what mattered was that toolbox that he had loved his whole life because he'd been an orphan and he'd never had anything. And he was a man who loved to work with his hands, unlike his son, who was sort of a lazy klutz. My father was a man of organization and cleanliness. And like I said, his garage looked like an old hardware store with labeled boxes and everything, whereas mine is just stuff lying around and greasy things that never got cleaned up. And anyway, he loved this toolbox. He'd finally gotten a toolbox from being a boy who had to keep things in a cardboard box. He'd gotten this old toolbox, and he'd stenciled his name on it, and it was a beautiful object to him. Over the years, it had gotten beaten up, but he always had that toolbox and could always carry it around. And whenever I touch that toolbox, I'm touching something that my father loved. I can pick up that autographed picture of Babe Ruth and I say, man, that's nice. Maybe someday, I'll sell it and pay for part of my kid's college. But it doesn't touch the heart. And like we talk about, my wife has her mom loved small things. She was someone who had a love of the diminutive, little tchotchkes and knickknacks. And she took great pleasure at just little toys, things that I consider bric-a-brac and got in the way of the world, but she loved them, and she had this little boat that was made out of, it was a basket, a woven basket, and had a little teddy bear and a couple of other things in it, and she used to giggle every time she saw that boat. And now we've got that boat, and as an object, it's an appalling thing, but when you look at it, we see her giggle, we hear her giggle, we see her joy. And that boat is one of the most precious things we own. And we don't know when those are. We don't know when the moment is that little girl is going to, we're going to make the touch that changes a person's life. We don't know what object we have in our life that's going to change someone's life in the memory. So we have to live with a mindfulness about what we do, what we have, what we value, and honor it as if these are the moments that are going to somehow pulsate in someone else's life and someone else's memory. And that's really what I want to get across in this book, is that we don't know when those moments are, so we have to live with a mindfulness that we don't always have.
You have an extremely powerful story of a personal experience of yours in the book Ordinary Sacred that I think is very, very meaningful. And you were in England, and there were quite a few panhandlers around, and you were walking about one evening. It was damp, which isn't unusual for England, sort of like the Pacific Northwest, and cool, and a
foggy
little boy stops you, and he wasn't under 10. In fact,
I think he was about 18, actually.
Okay, about 18. And he had sad eyes. He just portrayed something, and it touched a part of you. And he was begging. He was hungry. He was begging. But there was something about him that was different. And you decided to reach into your wallet, and what happened after that?
Well, I tend to just, like everyone else, I'm pretty inured to panhandlers. And, at a certain point, the heart grows hard, and you just walk past them, cross to the other side of the street, but somehow ignore them. and usually pass some kind of a subtle judgment on them. You know, they should, this person, and I do it all the time. You know, here's, why is it always a young white man? Why isn't this guy out with a job? Why, you know, and very implied, or, you know, there's a judgmentalism at work. Something about this boy, he was very earnest, and his eyes were sad, and he exuded an intelligence, and he said he needed money, I believe, to get home at that time. And, you know, the same story we all hear, that I'm out of gas. In this case, we were walking, of course. But I said, all right, and thought, well, I like this guy. I'm going to give him something. I reached in my pocket, and I pulled out, I believe it was a 10-pound note was all I had.
Mm-hmm.
And the $20. And I didn't want to give him $20, but he was standing there. He'd seen me reach in my pocket and pull out my billfold. I thought maybe I'd have a pound or two and give it to him. But there I am with only that 20-pound, that 10-pound note, and him looking at me. And I thought, damn, now what am I going to do? So I pulled out the 10-pound note and gave it to him. And he said, oh, thank you, thank you, thank you. I said, don't thank me. Just pass it on when you get a chance, which is, you know, what most of us say to someone. But he mm-hmm. stopped me, and he grabbed my arm, and he said, no, I have to thank you. You have to let me thank you. It's all I have to give you is my thanks. And that was a gift of insight that was so great to me, that realizing that one of the things that people need to be able to do is give their thanks to someone and to feel that that's the gift that they give back. You know, we get people give us things. We say, oh, I don't need anything. I don't want anything. Very often the elderly. I think that I mentioned further on in that story when I went to visit a friend of ours who wanted to make cookies for me, and I didn't really want any cookies, but all she could do was give these gifts, and we have to be so attentive to the gifts that someone gives us. So when a little child brings you something they made, we always take it and say, oh, thank you, that's so wonderful, just so the child will feel good. But when you get in a situation where you think you're giving something to someone else and you don't allow them to give back to you, you're taking away some of their humanity. And this man really reminded me that the biggest gift that I could give him was to acknowledge him as a human being. The money was a fine bit of transaction and probably helped him out, but what matters to him was that a person could connect with him as a human being and allow him to give something from the richness of his own experience, which was a real thank you, because that $20, that 10 pounds, meant more to him than it would have meant to almost anyone else at that time. And I just thought it was a very great gift and a very great lesson.
Well, you can tell from the stories that his book, Ordinary Sacred, can really create a spot in your heart and your mind. And I think more than that, it just makes us aware of how we need to be grateful for the moments that we have. That even if we have disruptions, if we have calamities that occur, if we have confusion, there is that mindfulness that we can develop that makes us aware that the moment we're living is the moment we're living. And it can be exceedingly rich in the gifts. Now, Kent, do you have a website that people can go to find out more about what you do?
Yes, I do. It's www.kentnerburn, that's KentNerburn.com.
KentNerburn.com. That's K-E-N-T.
Right.
Nerburn is N like Nelly, E-R-B-U-R-N. Well, Kent, it's been a delight having you as a guest. Thank you so much for being with me. And this is Donna Siebel. Don't forget to check out KentNerburn.com. Ohayesa, who is a Dakota Sioux, said, "We recognize the spiritual in all creation and believe that we draw power from it." Ordinary Sacred. Beautiful book. Wonderful read. Make a great gift for someone special in your life. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away. More good things to share.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Siebel. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprisin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N. And find out more information. You can order Toprisin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprisin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number, if you'd like to call in and chat with me, is 888-627-6008. I had a wonderful time over the weekend at the Emerald Spiral Expo. I want to thank those of you that came up and told me how much you enjoyed the radio show. That was just a wonderful gift. And for those of you that maybe are listening today because of having found out about the show, I'm so delighted that you're able to join us. Give us a call at 888-627-6008, and I'll light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. And then afterwards, you're welcome to ask me a question about anything you like. Again, my thanks to the people at the Emerald Spiral Expo. I just had a great time, and it didn't rain on Saturday, which was just absolutely wonderful. But there's just so many wonderful people, so many wonderfully talented individuals that were at the event. And I want to thank Sue Harmon and so many of the other people that were there that made the event just absolutely spectacular. It was a pleasure being a part of it. Okay, I wanted to share some thoughts with you. And this is especially important to me. One of the reasons that it is that I believe, as I was wisely advised many years ago, that whenever you have any kind of talent, you must continue to educate yourself. This is what was said by Napoleon Hill so many years ago. The privilege of stimulating your mind with suggestion and thoughts of your own choosing is your prerogative power. Now think about those words. Privilege of stimulating your mind with suggestions and thoughts of your own choosing is your prerogative power. How many times, as we are growing up... Thank you. I know there's a caller. I'll be right with you. How many times when we're growing up, we're told, this is this, this is this, and this is this. This is red, this is green, this is purple, this is white. And we say, okay, if you say so, that's it. Adulthood is learning how to question. And I want to talk a little bit about this, but don't ever, ever let anybody else take away your right of choice and how you choose to exercise your mind and your willingness to learn. You check history. Any time that has been taken away from an individual or masses of individuals, dark ages result. And it's happened over and over and over again in history. Let's take our first caller for the day. Welcome to the show, first name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
Am I on?
Yes, you are, dear. Where are you calling in
from? Oh, hello, Donna. Thank you for taking my call. My name is Shelley, and I'm from Alberta. Canada.
From Alberta. Oh, I'm so delighted that you called in. And let's get down to business with you right away. The first thing that I'm looking at, Shelley, is intense concentration with you. I think you have found yourself evolving into a level of responsibility on a professional level as well as on a personal level that is going to require a lot of attentiveness. And I'm seeing you going into a library. I am seeing you doing some research. And you seem to be involved in a bit of a quandary because you've got some conflicting information that you're trying to work through. My perception is I'm glad you've got the conflicting information because it's causing questions. And I believe that there is someone that has an understanding. Actually, I'm looking at four people. There is someone that has an understanding of what you're trying to research from their own perspective that is really going to make you go, wow, I hadn't seen any of this in my written material. And then I'm seeing someone else giving you another perspective, and I think you're going to end up doing a write-up of some kind that is going to show different perspectives and observations on the part of people with varying circumstances. I think you're going to find yourself becoming a better researcher than you've ever been before. And you're also going to discover that when you have this knowledge, there is a strength that you acquire because you realize that black isn't just black. It could be multitudes of shades of black. And there can be a lot of gray mixed in every once in a while and maybe a few other colors. So you're saying to yourself, I cannot stay stuck in the type of thinking that I have been in. And you're going to realize there's a way of bringing up a challenge to people so that it doesn't intimidate them, it doesn't make them fearful that they're going to lose face, and you're going to learn how to develop what I call a diplomatic demeanor. And that is one of courtesy, knowing how to use your words wisely and how to bring them together in a format that is going to enable you to have a communication skill that others are going to envy. They're going to be amazed at how you can walk into what seems to be a very hostile environment. And within a relatively short period of time, the hostility dissipates and there is a resolution or an openness for communication. You'd make a terrific negotiator. What kind of work do you do?
Well, right now I'm a life skills coach.
Well, that fits. That fits. Mm-hmm. And I think you're going to find yourself becoming even better at being able to communicate more effectively with people. I just think that anything that enables you to be, for all intents and purposes, the negotiator, that takes what seemingly is impossible to work with and yet opening up the opportunity for a healthy communication without fear and all of the negative that goes along with the fear so that good resolution can come about. I just think you're just going to be an ace at this. You're not yet, but I give you 5 years. And I think you're going to have a lot of people that are really going to want to use your services. So I think you're going to expand beyond being a life coach.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you
so
much. So
I know that's good. Did you have a question for me, dear?
Well, yes. I'm just basically that kind of was part of my question, you know, my job and where my direction of that was going to go, if I was going to move or kind of stay put where I was. You know, of course, the health issues, anything you see there.
Well, first, I don't think you're going to move for a while because I think with economics, it's not a good thing for you to do, and you're trying to work through some issues. So give yourself some time. Don't worry about that. That'll take care of itself. The health issues, stress is the biggest thing with you because you internalize so much. You've got to find some way of relieving your stress. You need to find a way, whether it's dancing, music, art. It could be in a public speaking environment, like with a Toastmasters group. But you need something that, in my mind's view, is a no-brainer. It's just doing something physical.
Mm-hmm.
You may decide
well,
to take
tulips
in your bathroom. I don't know. It all depends on what works for you. But you got to get out of the head because you're so much in the head, in the mind spectrum, that you to release yourself from that kind of stress, then you need to do something physical.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I definitely do that, so that's good.
Well, keep it up. That's a good, healthy balance for you.
Okay. Well, I guess if I have time for one more question.
Shelley, no, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to limit
that's
it. I've got
okay.
another caller waiting.
That's quite all right. Thank you so very kindly, Donna.
Oh, you're very welcome, Shelley. Thanks for calling in.
Okay, have a beautiful day. Bye-bye.
627-6008. We have a caller, Susan. Susan, thank you for waiting. And where are you calling in from?
Wasilla, Alaska.
Wasilla. Do you still have snow on the ground up there?
Oh, we have plenty.
Boy, they, you got plenty? I hope when I come up to Anchorage in May, it's gone.
You know, we have so much, it might still have some on the ground.
It could be. It could be. I'm just being a stinker. Let's get down to business with you, Susan. The first thing that I'm looking at is a consideration for a move. A relocation is not happening real soon, but yet I am seeing the concept of it being tossed around in conversation. And I think that if you can be patient with evolving into the move so that you really get what you want, I think you'll be much more satisfied, a lot happier. There are some experiences that you're having intuitively that I think are having an effect and on your looking at the world around you. And I really want you, when you're documenting these things, to also record your emotions, how you feel, if there were spots in your body that you had a particular sensory awareness of. I want you to be aware of it, because what's happening is that there's a new level of your own intuitive capacity that is beginning to blossom. And as it is blossoming, there is this entire aspect of the whole physiology of yourself being involved in it. And so when you pay attention to the sensory factors, your skills are going to become a lot sharper. And one of the things you do have to be aware of, you must not become a garbage can for everybody's emotions. If you walk into an environment and it just is causing you to just become so agitated and you can't figure out why, mentally you are assessing things around you, go, I don't get it, what's going on here? Well, just be quiet, calm yourself down, and you'll find someone maybe has had a fight with their boyfriend or something's going on with some people, or maybe they have a member of the family that is very ill, and you're picking up on their emotions. And you need to know how to be aware of it and yet sort of detach from it so that it doesn't overwhelm you. And this is something that I think you are going to be becoming more and more aware of. And as you become aware of it, just know that you can imagine yourself in a bubble, if you will, make it any color you want, and just know that you are not absorbing. You have got an insulation around you that's not going to absorb other people's stuff. Now, Susan, I know we're going to go on break. Would you stay online with me?
You bet.
All right. Susan is on the line with us from Wasilla, Alaska. We're going to be taking a break for just a moment. And if you want to call in, the number to call in to is 888-627-6008. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com, that's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N, and find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007, that's 800-959-1007. 859-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosyn, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Susan is on the line, and I'm going to be going back to her right away. But before I do, I wanted to mention my Quantum Mind 3 class is coming up in University Place, Washington, and this is going to be on April the 14th. This class is going to be just awesome. The first portion of the class is going to be taught by Robert Newman. We're going to be discussing Chinese medicine. The second part of the class, we're going to be discussing dreams, how to use them as a tool, how you can interpret your dreams, and also we're going to be doing some psychic mind exercises to show you that you are capable of more than you could ever imagine. Now, this class, we are taking registration now. The class is $59.95. It's from 10 until 4, and we serve a lovely lunch. So if you would like to be involved in this class, do get in touch with me. Call me at my office, 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604. Also, I want to let you know, as of May 1st, the Donna Sebo Show will be starting at 9 a.m. Pacific time. Yes, we're going to be switching from 3 in the afternoon Pacific to 9 a.m. Pacific. So mark your calendars. May 1st is the day, the first day of the new show. So I wanted to let you know about that. Let's go back to Susan in Wasilla, Alaska. Susan, thank you for being so patient and waiting. What's your question for me today?
Well, Donna, I have been offered a job opportunity, and I was very much excited about it. On the other hand, I work with my sister, who made me devastated about it. So I wanted your take if it would be a good transition.
Well, let me answer it this way. I feel that the job opportunity is going to enable you to expand your skill set. I believe that you are going to be able to communicate with your sister in a way. Yes, she's going to be disappointed, but I think she's also going to be happy for you. I'm wanting to ask you, what kind of a job position are you being offered, and where is it located?
Okay, well, right now I'm a realtor, and I am being offered a mortgage originator position,
mm-hmm.
which would increase my income, and it would be the building across the street is the location.
I think, again, as I said before, this is a wonderful opportunity for you to expand your skills. Now, with your sister, was there a particular something that the two of you were doing on a regular basis where you feel like this is very important to her, where you felt she would be devastated? Because I really think she'll make the adjustment very easily.
Yeah, we work together in real estate.
Mm-hmm.
We work on the same team.
See, I don't think it's going to be devastating to her. I think
really?
That, no, I don't think so. I think that when you tell her about it, it actually, not to say she wouldn't miss you being there, but I think mm-hmm. that this is going to expand your knowledge base, and it's going to benefit her. So I see this as a win-win for both of you.
Yeah, she just depends on me quite a bit. So
well, she will be able to make the adjustment.
Okay, terrific.
You'll be able to make the adjustment. And I think that this, again, is going to be a win-win for both of you.
And I'm seeing still doing a few things for her. But I think it's going to change. So I really think that this, as I said, and I'm repeating myself for good reason, I do think this is a win-win.
Oh, terrific.
Now,
oh, that's
by
good.
The way, at this new job, I want you to be aware of something. You're going to have the opportunity to attend a number of different conferences. Some of them you may have to pay for out of your own pocket. Others, the company will pay for. I encourage you to attend every one you possibly can attend. I will tell you why.
Okay.
Within 1 year, the level of contacts that you will make professionally, the knowledge that you will acquire, is going to enable you to really see how you could have a secondary income working with a different environment with properties. So this is something that, again, I think is just, it's just a tremendous blessing for you.
Oh, I'm excited even more now.
Well, you should be. This is just going to open up your world of thinking and awareness of how to utilize money and property, investment, different levels of same. I think this is just terrific.
Well, thank you. I hope to see you when you're up here.
Well, I'm coming up in May, so if you're getting my email newsletter, you'll have my itinerary.
You betcha.
All right,
thank
Susan.
You so much, Donna.
Oh, you're more than welcome.
All right,
thanks for calling in, dear. This is Donna Sebo. My goodness, there are so many things that are going on in the world. I always find it fun when you study history. Remember, I was talking to you earlier about how Napoleon Hill said, you have the prerogative to choose your thoughts. It is so important to be aware of that. Because I have been doing some reviewing of materials that have been submitted to me. And, of course, I've done this, my goodness, for 11 years now. And history is absolutely amazing. And if you can take the time to really study history a little bit and see what's gone on in different cultures, whether it's China, whether it's India, South America, Australia, the United States, it doesn't make any difference. There's always the hills and valleys of good times and bad times. But one of the biggest things throughout human history, and this is my observation, when people give up their right of choice, telling someone, a government, a religion, I don't care what it is, say, you do the thinking for me, it's all right, I don't want to think, they always end up being made slaves. And slavery can come in an appearance of all kinds of shapes and colors. It's so important. I don't care who you are, male, female. I don't care what your color of skin is. It doesn't make any difference. The ability to think, to reason, is something that has to be cultivated. It is not something that just is. Some people are naturally curious. But to think, to question, this is something we have to learn, because so many times we're not encouraged to do that. So in closing out the show today, I'll close it as I always do. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You're the captain of your soul. It's very important that you understand that. Hey, tomorrow we're talking about Atlantis. Oh, is this going to be a cool show? So be sure you join me. We're going to be talking with Ram Flemath tomorrow, and this is just going to be such a fascinating subject. The book is terrific. See you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.